Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Friends with Money podcast. My name is Tom Watson, a senior journalist here at Money Magazine, and it's a pleasure to be with you. Our topic today is equities, and it's a topic that we love to talk about here at Money Magazine because we know that equity investments are such a key pillar of wealth generation for so many people. And chances are that's probably the case for you too. So what are we talking about specifically? Well, we're going to zoom in on Australian shares and how they've performed as an investment. We'll touch on their risk profile compared to other investments, and we'll be taking a look forward into 2023 and beyond. And to do all this, I'm pleased to say that I'm joined by Rob Tucker, Managing Director and Portfolio Manager of Equity Fund Manager, Chester Asset Management. Rob, thank you so much for sitting down with us today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You are very welcome. Perhaps to start us off, Rob, so you managed the Chester High Conviction Fund that was actually named Best Australian Shares Fund 2023 in our Best of the Best Awards. But for those who haven't heard of your fund before, could you tell us a little bit more about what you do and also the origin of the name?
Yeah, sure, Tom. So, look, we're thrilled to win the award, obviously, but I feel like it's almost 20 years in the, you know, since we started the journey, because my first day in the markets as an equity investor was the day the NASDAQ crashed 17% in 2000.
Oh, wow.
So my journey's been an interesting one since then through the GFC. So 20-odd years of experience. But we started Chester in 2017. There's three of us that have all worked together for a long time, Anthony Kavanagh, Luke Howard, and myself. And a high conviction fund is really designed to be different from the index. That's why it exists. You know, Australian shares as an equity class or an asset class have done very well, but our job is to provide superior returns to the index. Mm. And so a high conviction fund is designed to be different from the index. So our fund is very benchmark and aware. So if BHP is 11% index or Commonwealth Bank's 9% index, we'll only hold those stocks if we think they're good investments, not because they're a big part of the index. So in that way, our fund is very benchmark and aware. And we split the equity allocation to three buckets, effectively. Most of the fund, 65 to 70%, is allocated to what we call predictable sectors or predictable industries that can grow very predictable cash flow growth, such as healthcare or infrastructure or consumer staples like the supermarkets. We're very happy to allocate to cyclical stocks, but very judiciously, because they're quite volatile in terms of the cash flows they generate, which is the resources or the energy sectors. So we're happy to have some, but not too much exposure to cyclicals. And then what we do differently, we think, is have a little bit of cash and gold. Gold equities are always, or over history, have been non-correlated to the rest of the Australian share market. So normally in times of real volatility, gold holds up quite well. And so by having that allocation, our fund tends to be less volatile than the market, i.e. in March 2020, the real crisis of the pandemic, the market fell 21%. Mm. Our fund fell 16.8% because of that cash and gold buffer that we have in the portfolio. So we're very mindful of protecting capital as well as we can in down markets. So I think Chester has been designed to try and compound returns over 10 years, and we think the best way to do that is protecting capital in down periods and then grow from there. So that's really mindful of drawdowns, because that's trying to preserve wealth as a sort of, as a philosophy. I think it stems back from that first day in the markets when the NASDAQ fell 17% and watching certain stocks in the market back in 2000 fall 90% in 12 months. So you really, the mindset and the philosophy is trying to protect that capital at the outset and then hopefully grow with some sort of predictable cash generating ideas. So Chester, as I said, started 5 years ago. It was actually named after my grandfather.
Oh.
So my grandfather's name was Chester, and he gave me my first parcel shares when I was 18. So he bought me a parcel of AFIC shares. So Australian Foundation Investment is a listed stock, or it's a listed company, but it was the first managed fund in Australia. So it's really gave me the insight to understanding what drove the Australian economy, because you're getting access as an 18-year-old I was getting access to the supermarkets or the telco sector or the bank sector or the resources. So you're understanding what drives economies. So that was my introduction to share investing. So that was my grandfather, and he used to catch the tram into the city until he was 95 because he actually just loved investing. So that's really what hopefully he's brought with us or left with us is a curiosity to continue to invest and find new ideas. And to be honest, my father's name was Dennis, and Dennis Asset Management sounds stupid.
I think I agree that the chest is definitely a more fitting name and a lovely origin story as well. I really like that. Thank you for sharing that with us. How about we get into the topic a little bit more specifically then? So, Rob, can you tell us how have Australian shares typically fared as an investment over the years?
Well, it depends what time period you're looking at, Tom, but over the last 30 years, Australian shares have been one of the best performing asset classes in the world. I think they've done 9.6% return or compound over that 30-year period. Over 100 years, they've done about 8.7% compound return. So over time, if you zoom out, Australian shares have been a really strong asset class. So that's superior to property in most cases, obviously superior to cash or fixed interest. So I think it absolutely should be part of anyone's portfolio having exposure to the share market. Obviously, it comes with volatility, and that's what we see through that drawdown period in the COVID year, March 2020, and the GFC. So there is obviously volatile periods in equities, but we try and remind investors that we're investing in companies. We're not investing in the market. So if we're investing in really good companies that have good, strong cash flow, ultimately we think that cash flow support will drive valuations higher over a period of time. So I think the best thing we can do is focus on the long term rather than worry about what's happening this next quarter or next 6 months or next 12 months.
Well, I think you touched on some of the risks there. Is there anything else that I guess people should be mindful of when investing in shares rather than, say, property or another asset type?
Tom, I think it's really hard, but I think psychology plays a big part in investing. And this gets back to this, the core essence of fear and greed. Mm-hmm. I unfortunately had a few investors put money out of the fund at the bottom of March 2020 because they got fearful, which was exactly the wrong time to take money out. And then you often see retail investors put money in when there's excessive exuberance. So I think if you can manage your own psychological feelings about the market, your emotional state, and just remind yourself that you're investing in companies that provide good cash flows and ride out those volatile periods, you can see what the Australian shares have done as a class over that 30-year period or 100-year period. And so I think it's really important to be patient, stay the course, and not try and make short-term profits out of shares because you might want to put money in to buy a house in 2 years' time. Well, I always advise people against that. Because I don't know what's going to happen to the share market in 2 years. I'm pretty sure I can tell you what's going to happen over the next 7 to 10 years because I think we'll go up. But I don't quite know the next 2 years because Russia might invade Ukraine or there might be another pandemic. So there's always black swan events that makes short-term thinking around markets sort of volatile. Mm. But if you sort of stick to your knitting and follow companies closely and invest with discipline, I think that's the way to compound returns over a 7 to 10 year journey.
It's interesting that you touched on that that point about psychology and patience because those are conversations that we've been having with multiple different people, especially during 2022 when I think we have seen so much volatility. But you touched on the future there a little bit, so let's get into that. How do you think Australian shares are going to fare this year in 2023, or even I guess in the next few years ahead?
Yeah, it's probably an answer in two parts, Tom, because I think there's still some risks to be seen on the short term because I don't think we've seen this level of interest rate rises in 2022 as we have for a significant period of time. And so there's one measure I look at, which is the household share of mortgage repayments relative to the household share of disposable income. So normally mortgage repayments as a percentage of your disposable income are about 16 to 18%. This is the average Australian. And the RBA considers tight monetary policy to be when your mortgage repayments are above 25% of your total disposable income. Right now, mortgage repayments with the interest rate rise we've had are at 28% of total disposable income. So the RBA knows this. This is quite restrictive monetary policy. So I think what we might see in the next 6 months is consumer behaviour changing, because suddenly you're faced with higher mortgage costs, your food costs are going up, and your energy costs are going up. So I think there's a very much a focus on things we need to spend money on, essential services, versus things we want to spend money on, which is, you know, discretionary goods. So we have had a really amazing period for discretionary spending post-lockdown. And everyone set up their home office and bought the new TV or new couch or whatever it is. But so I think there's a period of softness in the consumer ahead of us while the market recalibrates how much they have in terms of excess savings. But beyond that, so I think I'm sort of slightly cautious about the next 6 months for that reason. But I think ultimately the RBA and the Federal Reserve in the US will probably start cutting rates by the end of next year. So that will take some of the pressure off. And because you can see a reason why inflation starts coming down this time next year. The interest rate rise have been because of inflation. I think inflation is starting to slow down or soften. But if you ask me about Australia over the next decade, and I spent 5 years in Hong Kong looking at Australia through the lens of a global investor, and Australia is a remarkably good place to invest capital over the next 10 years. I think you've seen through the Russia invasion of Ukraine and the dire circumstance in Europe right now about energy security. So Australia has energy security. We have food security. And we have a demographic tailwind with population growth through both natural births and immigration. So that's a luxury that a lot of other countries don't have. So I think Australia is really well placed as a extractive country or primary production in terms of energy and food, and even the iron ore and the lithium that goes into electric vehicle batteries. So there's a large part of the Australian market that's still going to be very desirable for the next decade. So I think if I'm a global investor, I'm looking at Australia as a really strong democracy, a really lovely place to live with, and people want to move here. So when we open the borders up, I think we'll see stronger immigration, and that will drive, you know, shortage of housing. So I think the economic growth in Australia is going to be relatively compelling versus the rest of the world over the next decade. So I think Australia is really quite fascinating over that time period, notwithstanding the fact I think there's probably a soft period ahead for the next 6 months in terms of what the consumer can spend.
So with that in mind, you touched on a couple of areas here already as well, but what kind of shares or companies are likely to do better in the next few years then?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Tom. So I think we need to be really well diversified because there's a range of scenarios still geopolitically. But I think there's still, under the energy transition mechanism, as we're desperately trying to convert towards being carbon neutrals as a society, but there's still a need for fossil fuels, and the underinvestment in the energy sector or oil fields has been quite stark the last 7 to 8 years. So I still think there's a really strong cash flow scenario that occurs with the energy companies. So energy is certainly one sector I think is interesting from a cash flow perspective in the next 3 to 5 years. Healthcare is a sector that's economically insensitive. So people are still going to go to hospital. They're still going to get treatment for immune disorders. So CSL is still a wonderful company to own. So energy, healthcare, I think some property stocks are now trading well below book value because the interest rate rises. But I think if the market rebounds like I think it does, then I think some really compelling opportunities in the property space. And I think the electric vehicle battery thematic's not going away. So I think some of the commodity providers in terms of copper or rare earths or lithium or cobalt or graphite, I think there's some really interesting structural plays over the next decade. So I still think, I guess a fund manager is always optimistic. And while there's certainly challenges, I always think there's some really interesting opportunities to, and places to invest your money.
Rob, this has been a wonderful chat and a really positive one too, which is always nice to have. But we're starting to kind of run out of time. So we might leave it there for today. But thank you so much for joining us, because it truly has been a pleasure chatting.
Tom, thanks very much for having me.
You are so welcome. And before we go, don't forget that if you enjoy listening to Friends with Money, we'd love for you to share or recommend it to your own friends or family. You can also leave us a glowing review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button to make sure that you don't miss out on any of our future episodes. We'd also love to hear from you if you have any questions, comments, or story ideas. So to get in touch, you can use our dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. And last of all, you can keep up to date with all the latest financial news on our website by heading over to moneymag.com.au. That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast, but we'll be back in your feeds next week. I'm Tom Watson. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.